Penguin Random House Canada presents Unreconciled: Family, Truth, and Indigenous Resistance by Jesse Wente. Read for you by the author. For Norma and Barbara. Prologue. I remember the exact moment I learned I was an Indian. It was a summer afternoon when I was about 10. My softball team was playing in Topham Park, just around the corner from our home in Toronto's East York, and I was coming up to bat, crossing the infield dirt, to take my place at the plate.
La 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 la.
The league was a local one. Both teams made up of kids from the neighborhood. I'd played in it from the time I was 5. Starting out in T-ball at the smallest of Topham's three diamonds, and working up to the big field, which had dugouts, a scoreboard with an announcer's booth, grandstands, and makeshift bullpens where the pitchers could warm up. I'd walk over to watch when the men's teams played there at night, the big lights turning everything a bright, washed-out yellow. The ball would almost glow when hit into the air, and, if it carried far enough, would fade into the darkness as it sailed beyond the reach of the light poles. Baseball was big for our family then. My dad, who'd grown up a Cubs fan in Chicago, had embraced the Blue Jays when the franchise was born in 1977. He'd listened to games on a transistor radio he carried while doing work around the house, or watched them with me on the little Zenith TV in the living room. Occasionally, he'd buy the cheap outfield tickets you could get at the grocery store during the summer, and we'd see a game at Exhibition Stadium in seats that were angled a little bit off, so they had to turn slightly to take in the action. Dad played third base and some outfield in a slow-pitch league for a while, too, and would later coach both me and my sister. Some of my fondest childhood memories are of spending time with him at the batting cage or playing catch at the park. In our softball games, it was common for players to make cracks at the opposition, refrains that tended to max out at the "we want a pitcher, not a belly itcher" level. That bruising psychological warfare was mostly directed at the better players because, hey, they were good. I would classify myself as just okay all around, but bordering on good at the plate. I'd make consistent contact and was patient enough to take a walk if the pitcher couldn't find the zone, which happened regularly. And when I did catch a hold of one, I get hit at far, a combination of decent technique and being fairly big for my age. So getting jeered at wasn't unusual and was maybe even expected. It was something you laughed off or ignored, just a part of the game. What I heard that particular afternoon was something different, though. Not one of the rhymes or cracks repeated to the point where they lost all meaning that rang out when other kids went up to bat. This was a sound reserved for me.
La 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 la.
It started all at once, as if they'd met up to plan it before the game, all the opposing players flapping their hands in front of their open mouths to make the noise.
La 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 la.
They were war whooping. It was a sound I'd heard before, but I couldn't place it immediately. Or maybe I didn't want to. Later, when I was old enough to get stopped by the police, I'd become more familiar with that pattern of thought, pushing aside the certain knowledge of why this was happening to look for some good reason, some reason other than the fact that my identity alone could incite in another person a desire to do harm, that my simple existence could be seen as a provocation or offense. I knew the noise, though. I knew what it meant, and that understanding could be delayed for only so long. I knew it from Saturday morning cartoons, watched from behind a bowl of cereal, the last of the milk disappearing to reveal the sugar clumped at the bottom. It was the noise made by the Indians Bugs Bunny killed, counting them off on a chalkboard and singing as he went. One little, two little, three little Injuns, four little, five little, six little Injuns. Oops, sorry, that one was a half-breed. Scrubbing a mark in half as he corrected himself. It was made in the movies I watched on TV by the savages that besieged the good settlers on their journey of destiny, the savages who had to be vanquished to set the world right. The kids on the other team knew what it meant, too. They'd seen the same cartoons and the same kind of movies. Their parents, who would have known my parents, also understood, as did the coaches, though no adult stepped in to put a stop to it. It meant I was an Indian, the bad guy, the savage, the loser. Now, it certainly wouldn't have been news to me to be identified as Anishinaabe or Ojibwe. I had known myself as both for as long as I could remember, not unlike the way I knew my dad was American. My family didn't drape itself in our ethnic background, but it wasn't hidden. It's just what we were. It's why we occasionally ate fry bread and corn soup, why sometimes we drove for hours to visit our family in Serpent River, why I had a middle name that no one else did. That's what being Ojibwe was to me at the time, a collection of unremarkable and ever-present givens. I had never known anything else. But I'd never thought of myself as an Indian in the way it suddenly seemed everyone else did. Nor had I imagined that my Indianness made me significantly different from any other kid in the neighborhood. It did, though, and those kids wanted me to know it. They wanted me to feel what it was like to be reduced to a caricature in less time than it took me to step to the plate. To feel what it was like to have my interests and passions, my love of baseball and movies, my family's history, and my hopes for the future stripped away and replaced with a sound I'd never made, a sound I'd never heard any First Nations person make, except on a screen. I'd love to say that the whole thing ended with me crushing a ball beyond the left fielder's head, but I can't even remember what happened next. It's only the whooping that has stayed with me. Sadly, it has stayed with Canada, too. In late May 2018, a news story about a AAA youth hockey tournament in Quebec City caught my attention. After a bantam team called the First Nations Elites, made up of 13- and 14-year-old boys from several nations in Quebec, Ontario, and Nova Scotia, won the opening game of the Coupe Challenge Quebec AAA, the opposing players raised their hands in unison and made the same sound. La 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 la. This was just one of several racist incidents the elites would be subjected to over the course of the competition. They would face unfair treatment from tournament referees, taunts from spectators that included calling them savages, and according to Christina Gull, the mother of a boy on the team, the playing of powwow music by the arena DJ. "I was thinking, does this still exist?" Gull said to the CBC shortly after the tournament. "Are we in the 80s or 90s? At the time of that softball game in Topham Park, residential schools were still open. If I'd lived in a more remote community, I could have been in one. And when the elites took the ice in that youth hockey tournament, the final report of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was already nearly 3 years old. Still, despite taking place more than 30 years apart, the two incidents shared intention, effect, and origin. They were intended to demean, distract, and dehumanize. They hurt, and they lingered. I still vividly remember that sound, and I suspect that the boys of the First Nations elites and everyone else who's ever heard that sound on the field of play remember it too. It's always there, a reminder of who is us and who is them. That lack of progress across 3.5 decades should be shocking, something Gull highlighted in the thoughts she shared with the CBC. To many First Nations people, though, the shock at a racist act can last only so long and run only so deep, even if the pain lingers. We simply face this shit too often to be surprised by it, a world weariness we surely share with other marginalized communities. And really, we know better than to expect these attacks to stop when so many of their underlying causes remain unchanged and barely addressed. To be clear, before the other kids made that whooping sound at that softball game, I'd never heard it outside of movies or cartoons. Since then, I've been
Sample complete. Ready to continue?